Welcome to But For Real, a variety show podcast co-hosted by two therapists who also happen to be loudmouth feminists. I'm Valerie, your resident elder millennial child-free cat lady.
And I'm Emerson, your resident chronically online Gen Z brat. And on the show, we'll serve up a new episode every other week that will take you on a wild ride through the cultural zeitgeist, mental health, and beyond.
You'll definitely laugh and TBH sometimes maybe cry a little because this is a silly and serious show.
Buckle up, my friends, and let's get into today's episode.
Did you know that you'll make it about 4 seconds into this video before your brain asks if it should be doing something else, like right now?
And that's not a joke. That's the real documented average, people. In today's episode, we're talking about why our attention sucks and what we can do about it.
I'm so excited.
Yay! No, I'm really excited. Let's talk about our tea and crumpets, which is just, you know, the stuff we can't stop talking about to everybody. My spiel, not a new concept, wahaha, but seems in alignment with this episode and just kind of beyond, but just less is more. I feel like I've really been trying to take that on as more of just kind of like a values-aligned, values-based behavior over the past couple of weeks. And not being overly perfectionistic about it, I can really get black or white about like doing, and everyone's like, hey, we're not surprised, girl. the neurodiverse person is getting black and white about something? Who would have thunk? But just trying to let that be in my sessions, less is more. When I'm at the grocery store, less is more. Even down to like, okay, I'm going to remember to bring my like really cute little bagu because I don't need another bag from Walmart. Correct. Like, I just don't need all this fucking plastic. And I even thought about this like within my relationships. Again, black or white thinker, I can tend to overfunction or underfunction in like pretty much every area of my life. And so I'm really just trying to find this less is more, just more in the middle with things. Just, yeah, money, like everything I feel like is going into this less is more right now. And it feels right. It really does feel nice. It feels really nice that I'm not being like, how did I less is more today? I'm just not trying to be super structured with it. I'm just trying to notice like, okay, what can I do to just like dial things down right now or to just be with something instead of feeling like I have to change something all the time, optimize something all the time. I feel like I'm becoming really anti-optimizer. Just like I have just like my ADHD has that like efficiency curse a little bit where I'm like, what's the best method and the system that will change my life? And I'm like, just do the fucking thing. Less is more. So feels really good to kind of just come alongside of that for right now. And just timely with this kind of attention episode and everything, you know, you and I are nerds about this topic in general, but so more to come.
Yeah. I love that. And it's giving zen.
It's giving zen, peace.
It may be time to put a book on your list. It was one I mentioned sometime last year called A Book of Form and Emptiness.
Ooh,
it's fiction, but it's like, it's got this zen kind of peace woven throughout and very much that kind of less is more. I just am obsessed with that because, and I do think that as much as I am right there with you with like, okay, I don't need to try to apply this to literally everything.
No.
But there are certain just sort of like philosophies or this ethos that truly like try to find something that it doesn't apply well to. Like it's really,
it's everything.
It seems to be just especially in the cultural context that we are in, right? Yes. Pretty much with almost anything. Except for maybe like genuine love. Less
Correct.
Is more.
Less is more.
Sleep. Okay. Yeah. But most things, less is more.
Less is more.
Okay. So it's so funny that we are both on this like philosophical tangent today.
Yes.
Because, you know, normally we're just like shouting out TV shows and stuff. And I'm like, you know what I can't shut the fuck up about is, do you think consciousness survives physical death?
Oh.
I'm just going off in my little journey.
Mm.
And I mean, it's personally very timely right now as I'm talking because yesterday I said goodbye to my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And I have lost a number of people but never really had the opportunity to say goodbye in that sort of intentional way. It's a weird experience.
Weird.
Like someone you've known your whole life to be like, hey, so never gonna see you again. Hope that the transition goes well for you. Like, it was so special. I'm so I feel so blessed that we were able to make that work. And so obviously, like, this exploration that I'm talking about is certainly has been going on for weeks or months before this came up. But of course, that was on my mind yesterday. And we'll probably have to maybe do a future episode on it. And yeah, I think I just was very much kind of mired a lot of my adult life in this whole like science versus spirituality place. And now I'm like encountering all of these things. This another book I'm starting that is just like, actually, maybe they're more in integration than they are in conflict. So I'm just very nerding out about it right now.
Love. Also, so much peace and love to your grandpa.
Thank you.
Losing people is really weird.
Yeah.
And hard, you know, we like our grief episode that we did, that was like our third ever episode with Callaway. So yeah, just like making the space, but we could delve in so far into that because I just have thoughts, you know, my brain's like at the intersection of science and woo. I feel like I've been saying that all the time to people. I'm like, that's where I live, I think.
Viewers will see the table that we, it's sort of a makeshift table. But listeners, I have to tell you that before we started recording, I'm like setting up this little wicker-ish thing for our beverages. And I set my little can on it, and it's not a very flat surface. So I was like, just asking the can, are you stable? And Everson goes, I'm sorry, what?
I said, why the fuck did you just ask me that? Hey, she wasn't talking to me.
Absolutely not, she said.
I said, yeah, absolutely not.
So I had to give the can a book to sit on, and we wonder, what is your proverbial book?
My therapist. Oh my goodness. Okay. Let's get into Step Into My Office, where we read off a listener submitted little submish. We give a little bit of advice because we can't do that in the day job. Have to be very impartial, but not too impartial because we're Valerie and Emerson. So let's see who we have this week. Dear Val and Emerson, I run social media for a small business, so my job is literally to understand what makes people stop scrolling and pay attention to a post. And I'm good at it. I know the tricks and stay on top of trends as they constantly evolve. The problem is, I've started noticing myself doing this too much in my personal life. I'll post something, and then I'll feel this pull to check if it's, quote, performing. I catch myself mid-conversation with my husband, nodding along while half thinking about engagement rates. My daughter told me last week that I look at my phone more than I look at her, and I wanted to melt into a puddle of guilt. Woo! I don't want to quit my job. I actually like what I do, but I feel like I've turned into the exact kind of person who builds the exact kind of content that steals people's focus for a living. Is it possible to do this job without becoming this person, or is this a losing battle? Sincerely, complicit in the chaos.
Damn.
Love your awareness, babe. Yeah.
It's wow. A tough one.
What's your thoughts? Just kind of
first impressions.
I guess initially, it's just like, I don't know. I get that it's all being a cog in any part of it can make us sort of complicit in a way. And like, there's, you know, some truth to that.
Yeah.
But I also think about the joyful things that I see on my feed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about my gratitude for those as kind of like these little mini anchors. Because like, obviously I don't have to choose to go on there. But the reality is right now at this moment in time, many of us are.
Yeah.
And so if part of what you can create brings joy to someone's life, if part of what, like, let's say this small business, and that's the other thing, right, is like so many small business owners, especially let's say ethical small business owners, are like, ooh, they sometimes can feel a little weird about the sales and marketing aspect of things. But if you truly believe in the product or service that you are offering, then I think, isn't it good for more people to know that it exists?
Sure.
Right? And I also think of brands who, they don't just create marketing content just to sell the stuff. Like, they have fun with it. They make it fun and joyful. And then it's something that I get to laugh at. So I just think that, yes, if you're going to participate in this, there's ways that you can use those sort of psychological principles to manipulate attention, which is what ultimately advertising is. But you can lean into that and like, how do I just maximize this at any cost? But then I think there's a way of leaning into it where it's like, how do I expand joy?
Yeah.
In this. And then what do you think about the personal aspect of what she's saying, or he, I guess, of like, this is seeping not just in my work life, but into my personal life too.
Yeah. I think that's ultimately what I took is like, that's what's bothering this person the most, right? Like it's, and now I'm, oh my God, I'll post something. And then I'm like, is it performing? I'm talking to my husband. And then I'm just kind of like rolling around the little rocks in my mind. And so I don't know why I just thought about this, because I didn't even go. But I remember when you went to see Melissa Tears.
Yeah.
And you did that like unconscious amount, like it was all like marketing, yes, right? And so just like how much of an unconscious pull these things have. And Valerie and I are nervous system junkies. Y'all know that. Hypnotherapy junkies also. So I just think like, yeah, man, like it sounds like this is really impacting you kind of at the like unconscious level if you're existing in your home spaces and we're feeling that pull. And now, and that's not to say like, look at you in a trance, loser. No, like any one of us that picks up our pieces of technology are sucked into the trance-like states of that. So I think really like the kind of bleed over into the personal life. To that, I say the differences with internal and external boundaries. The internal boundary piece maybe needs to be strengthened. Like, okay, if I'm starting to notice myself drifting and thinking about these things, mindfulness, what is it like for me to just like try to come back to the present moment? There's nothing to be ashamed of. I think a lot of people hold a lot of shame about this topic that we're going to talk about today in general. I'm addicted to my phone and I'm in my 30s. And, you know, there's just like a lot of like shameful stuff. And I feel and hear some of the guilt and shame from this listener as well, especially with, you know, like my daughter, like you look at your phone more than you look at me. Woof. Like,
right.
Trust the kid to be like, guilt trip. Fuck you guys. Fuck you, mom. So, you know, the personal aspect of it, you're not the only person who's doing this.
Yeah.
You're not the only person. And I know I say that to a lot of like step into my office submissions, but like that's why people put things forward, because you feel like you're the only person in the world who's struggling or dealing with this kind of thing, but you're not.
And I feel like I'm so all about finding that balance between like validate and take the shame out of it.
Yes.
And also like, yeah, let's look at your agency here.
Yeah,
like
what is your action?
Yeah,
right?
If that felt shitty,
yeah,
then it's like, okay, that's not just like, oh, let me shame spiral, but what do I want to choose to do with that?
Mm-hmm. Heard. Okay. Listener, keep listening. And also if you want to put a step into my office, mm-hmm, we would love to read your submission. Feel free to reach out to us. You can email us.
We've got a form on our website, linked in our socials.
Yes,
and
yes,
if you submit it, we might even create a whole episode around it.
Yes,
babe.
Thanks.
Okay. So now we are going into our DSM. And in this DSM, all varieties of dysfunction, spiraling, and meltdowns are welcome. And we are talking today about attention activism. Mm. So I wanted to actually play a short little clip. We'll drop in the audio of this clip if we can. It's like little over a minute, because I just think it describes this movement so beautifully. And you can find this clip. We'll link it in the show notes too. There's a whole little section of mini clips that are related to this movement and the book Attensity.
There is a multi-trillion dollar industry using the most cutting edge military grade technology, hiring thousands of the most highly paid and trained engineers, all toward keeping you on your phone, on your screens. And the only answer to that is collective action. That collective action is called attention activism.
Attention activism is responding to the commodification of human attention and the harms that that has caused us. We believe that in order to respond to this problem, which is systemic, extremely well-financed, and characterized by the way that it atomizes us, that it pulls us apart, we believe the first step is to get together.
I mean, look, it's just like any other activist movement. It's a way of saying, hey, let's get together, because we, the people, together, have the power. And this isn't just about resistance either. Attention activism is about insisting on having the world of free and dynamic and human attention that makes life worth living. And they can't take that from us.
Yeah, interesting. Right? Ooh. Yeah, this collective action movement in response to the commodification of our attention. Mm. So let's see. Tomorrow I'll be taking the third and final class for Attention Activism 101, cool. which is offered by the Strother School of Radical Attention, SORA. They are a nonprofit based in Brooklyn, and they are built around this attention activism movement. I think they're sort of like the biggest hub of this geographically, but then they are obviously working to disperse this movement and create coalitions all across the world. So this particular class, I really appreciate because I wasn't sure what to expect. It's just like an hour and a half every class, so three times. And then they also have a 201 course as well. But it very much positions these as serious societal threats
yeah.
while also not being like all doom and gloom. It really sure. is like this joyful liberation movement, which I just think is so powerful and going to be a lot more effective than just getting us sort of like mired in hopelessness around it, right? So there's actual like a syllabus with these academic readings and we discuss them in small groups and it's really fun. A lot of contemporary readings, of course, but even historical readings going back to the father of psychology, William James,
Daddy.
Who in 1890, this is what he said about attention. He said, "Everyone knows what attention is. It is the taking possession by the mind in clear and vivid form of one out of what seem several simultaneously possible objects or trains of thought. Focalization, concentration of consciousness are of its essence. It implies withdrawal from some things in order to deal effectively with others and is a condition which has a real opposite in the confused, dazed, scatterbrain state, which in French is called distraction, the Zerstreuszeit, sorry, Germans. but it's just funny because, you know, he begins this statement with everyone knows what attention is
right.
and like kind of, but the hilarious thing is 130 plus years later, researchers don't really agree on exactly what this is. So it's just been interesting really exploring in a deep way. What is this? Who owns it? Where does it come from? What do I want to do with it?
Yeah.
And just get a lot more nuanced about the discussion. So one of the other framings that we've talked about is looking at attention not just as a problem of personal focus, that this really kind of came online, this focus on attention, during the Industrial Revolution. So when you think about it as like, oh, well, we weren't really too concerned about this thing. It just happened. It just was.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, when we're focused on productivity and efficiency and human capital, human production, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, we got to focus on, well, we got to make the people more productive, which means we got to make them more focused. So then in these factories, they realize, oh, we got to like create discipline out of these workers. And this part of that discipline is this idea of focused attention. So just interesting how all the way back to the origins of discussion of attention, a lot of it comes back to sort of the capitalist context.
Sure. Well, I think like all I feel like I talk about when it comes to our attention and social media and our phones and this like generation of iPad kids that I just like despise. I'm like, kids, you deserve so much better. It goes into like kind of like what we've found is like this fracking kind of metaphor. So a brief review on fracking, because I'm not saying fucking and I'm not saying facking, I'm saying fracking. So fracking is short for hydraulic fracturing, mama. This is giving science. So fracking is a well stimulation technique used to extract natural gas and oil trapped deep underground. So it's pumping high pressure fluid. They're mixing water with sand, chemicals. It's, you know, cracking open these rocks, propping open the fractures so that the resources can flow. Why am I not a science teacher? It's giving. So if you're not like clued into the tea of fracking, it's heavily criticized because it is a big threat to public health. It accelerates climate change, which like baby girls and theys and boys, we're all sweating and dying. And, you know, hey, climate change is very real. Thanks, Trump, for thinking that it's not. And we're just risking environmental damage. So the process, you know, we're polluting the water, toxic chemicals. We're having highly potent greenhouse gases. It induces earthquakes. It's basically fucked the house. Like, it's just bad. So how do we think, how do we take my really interesting science teacher metaphor about fracking and apply this to attention? Our attention fracking, we are extracting the valuable resource, which is your focus, in the same aggressive, you know, very high pressure way that fracking extracts the gas. It's cheap to the company, and it's costly to the resource being extracted, the land or the human. So our attention and our focus, our ability to think independently is becoming, not to be overly alarmist, but like in ways it's a lost art, right? Like to think and have independent thought, go onto TikTok and find any video or a YouTube commentary video about like the loss of originality. Everybody wants to have Sophia Richie, da da da, this and that. And I'm like, maybe Sophia Richie is Sophia Richie and you just like have your own face and hair and that's fine. So off of this, professor and social psychologist Shoshana Zuboff, fierce name, by the way, Diva, coined the term surveillance capitalism. She has a fat, old, like, I was just even just going through her abstract and some of her stuff, and I was like, whoa, there's a lot in here. She knows her shit. So she's really speaking towards tech platforms do not just want our time anymore. They want our behavioral data. So they want to know when you hop onto Facebook, at what point do you stop scrolling? At what point do you pause? At what point do you scroll, see something, and it leads you to search for something else? They want every click and every pause and scroll to be kind of watered down into this raw material, which is then sold to predict and shape what you'll do next. So our data once only existed for us, and now it exists to be sold back to companies who are essentially betting on your next move, which is really creepy.
Really creepy.
When we think about it.
I mean, there's been this sort of cultural joke in the last, I feel like, 20 years of like, oh, it's very 1984. I don't know if you ever had to read that. But like, yeah, it's like, no, no, for real, though. Like, it's...
It's 1984.
Right? Yeah, like, it's no longer...
George is faking.
Right. We don't even joke of like, you know, whereas 10 years ago, we're kind of like... It's kind of like my phone might be listening to me. And now we're just like,
My FBI agent, right? Like watching me. Like and I take on those memes. And yes, I think they're funny. And yes, probably 2 days ago, I said, I don't really give a fuck who has my data. But when I sit with myself, I'm like, no, it's actually kind of creepy.
Yes.
It is creepy. And Big Brother.
Yes. And I really relate to that. And I do feel like that's part of how these companies keep us complacent.
Yeah.
Is like the average Joe and Jane, yes. Like, yeah, I've said the exact same thing before. Like, I ain't got shit to hide. Like, right. Look at what you want, right? Like, theoretically, though, philosophically, do we just want that for every human being and corporations to have that level of power and surveillance? Like, of course not.
No.
So it doesn't matter whether you as an individual feel like you have anything, you know, to hide. It's just the larger ethical implications of this, right? So to talk a little bit about the kinds of attention, the flavors of attention, one thing I really appreciate, like I said, not all doom and gloom in this conversation of attention activism. It's not as simple as how I often have boiled it down is like, attention is either good or bad in the sense of like, oh man, I like focused really well. My attention was so good during this afternoon or whatever, or like my attention is just shit and it's just like I'm totally incapable. I mean, I'm guilty of this. I'll be like, my brain is broken, you know, and I think that again just sort of puts us in this very hopeless, disempowered place where we're just sort of like accepting the status quo because we feel like, oh well, is what it is, right? Business as usual. So they challenge us to think about all of these different flavors of attention and sort of like this idea of attentional ecologies. Like what are the various attentional ecologies in your life? And I was sort of reflecting on like, well, there's the type of attention that I'm in when I'm in session with someone. And I'm like, this precious, rare opportunity, almost forced in a way because of the professional dynamic where it's like, I'm not pulling out my phone
to look something up in the middle of our conversation, whatever, right? Like it's this sort of level of deep relational focus. And then there's the type of focus that I'm in when I'm moving my body. And then there's the type of focus where I'm like at the computer ping-ponging around, you know, like there's a lot. There's the type of focus that I'm in when I'm walking in a park or whatever, right? So it is a lot more than just good and bad. They give this beautiful image of like all these different types of grasses. And some of them have very deep roots. Some of them have quite shallow roots. Mm-hmm. And so looking at like, we need more than one type of grass. We need a diverse sort of arrangement or ecology of this. And so we can look at our attention in the same way. And then from that go, okay, well, yeah, we probably need to do some work to protect those deeper forms.
Yes.
But the shallower forms are not necessarily bad. There's an example of how we might sort of think too much in that binary of like, oh, well, flow state is just good, right? Mm-hmm. But a researcher, Natasha Dow Scholl, did some research in casinos and discovered that slot machines are very much utilizing that same kind of flow state that we hear about with like people who are deeply into their craft or like climbers or these people who get into flow state. So they're using the exact same design principles as your phone's infinite scroll in these casinos as well. So we got small goal, instant feedback, sense of control. And to your point, this is trance,
honey. Like, y'all are out there clicking that little thing going down.
Yes.
So it's weird.
Right. So flow is not always quote unquote good.
No.
Everything is context dependent.
Even hyper-focus, I want to like throw that in there too. Just like I spend majority of my time amongst neurodivergent people. And then even how the internet talks about hyper-focus. Oh my God, I'm hyper-focused on this thing. And it's like, okay, first off, we're as usual bastardizing terminology, which is annoying as fuck, pop psychology. Hey, but yeah, that there's hyper-focus when it serves the ADHDer, which is predominantly who I talk to hyper-focus about with clients, like when that really serves you. And when I've hyper-focused on something so deeply and gotten sucked into this trance-like state, now I haven't eaten for 6 hours and I can't stand up because my back hurts and I need to pee. My eyes are twitching. Like, it's like, yeah, there's layers to this shit. It's not just good or bad.
Exactly.
There's layers.
Yeah. So there's a philosopher, James Williams, not to be confused with William James, who created this three-tier framework, spotlight, starlight, and daylight.
So, I love this.
Right? So spotlight is like the small stuff, what you're doing right this moment. Starlight, the bigger picture, your daily choices kind of lining up with your values. And then daylight, the deepest level, your capacity to decide what your values and goals are in the first place. Mm. And so attention fracking technology doesn't just steal your spotlight of like, oh, I just like lost this last 10 minutes to scrolling. Over time, it actually can dim your starlight and daylight too. You stop being able to have that clarity of defining what matters to you. I mean, I think of that experience of, you know, just sort of like sitting down with a desire to journal and I'm just blinking.
Yeah.
Nothing, nobody White. Home.
White like, on. Nobody's home.
Yeah. Which it feels like that starlight is like really fading. Mm-hmm. So some interesting questions that we've been discussing in these classes.
Who owns attention?
Mm.
What do you think about that?
Oh my God. Again, this is like such a layered conversation, but I'm gonna go with what my earworm immediately said, which is like free will, it's me. Mm. And then my other like little song brain is like, you don't own me, which is like kind of choogy and funny, but like who owns attention? I think my personal understanding of that just so far, and like I'm open for discussion, like it should be down to the individual. And then, you know, there's layers to this. Like I talked about iPad kids earlier, like children who are, their brains are developing and they're moving in towards like more concrete kind of operational thinking, you know, stuff like that. But who owns attention? You know, like nowadays, who owns attention is these fucking phones. It's Apple, right? It's these like $1 billion companies, it's Facebook, it's Meta, it's these fucking Meta glasses.
Advertisers using those.
Yeah. Platforms. It's Kylie Jenner that signed a whatever billion fucking dollar deal with Meta so she can talk to you on a pair of glasses. Bitch, this is so dystopian. So, like, who owns attention? I think it should be you.
Right.
As the individual person who has free will.
And then zooming out to like what I was talking about in the beginning, too, when I think about this question right now, I'm like, I don't know. It's so, yes, it's me as the individual who's like experiencing the world mm-hmm. through this body, this set of eyes, this, you know, whatever. And then there's also, I feel like, a collective consciousness. And in that sense, like, what do we owe to each other in terms of honoring, like, I want to be a good steward of this resource because I am part of something bigger.
Yeah.
And then the question of what do we, like, the phrasing, the word choice that we have is so interesting, right? Like, we use the phrase paying attention.
Yeah.
What are we paying? Ooh. Who are we paying it to, right? And it really makes me think, I've always thought of attention as part of like, I have this acronym of TEAM, of time, energy, attention, money. These are the precious, valuable, finite resources that I, as an individual, have hopefully a lot of agency and autonomy over choosing how I spend those resources. And it's just interesting thinking about the parallels, but also the differences. For instance, with money and time, I at least sort of know like how much I have right now. Like for the rest of the day, I know, you know, how much time I have to spend. And I also know roughly how much money I have available to me at any given time, right? Whereas attention and energy are a little more fluid and hard to define, hard to measure. And so it's like I often will only realize that I'm out of attention like once it's too late, like it's gone. And that idea of like, how do we budget? You know, I know that I am much better with feeling a lot better about how I'm a steward of my money when I am being intentional about how I'm spending it, conscious about, you know, I like the phrase conscious spending plan as opposed to budget. But nonetheless, it's like I am intentional about how I'm choosing to spend it. Do we do the same with our attention, right? We just sort of willy-nilly it. And then in that same vein, can we be an intentional debt?
Which, what comes up for you with that?
I mean, so like whenever I think of debt, how we talk about sleep debt, right? And I think about our sleep episode where it's like sleep debt like is a thing, but it's not. Like if you didn't sleep, you've just lost that and you can't really recoup that per se. But
my aura tells me I can't.
Right. But your aura, and don't even get me started on aura rings.
So
baby, they're watching you. They said Valerie slept at 89% last night. I'm like, so what's Aura going to do next? Measure your farts? Like, I'm like, now what?
Nothing is sacred.
Nothing's sacred.
Right?
Attentional debt. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
You know?
Have you, like, because I feel like
experience.
And that it's cumulative over time for me.
Yes. Well, and I think of, like, how, for some reason, my brain is going into like when I know that I'm experiencing burnout and like how that fits into attentional debt for me, where not only do I, and like the waves of burnout that I've experienced post-grad, like in my professional life, I'm only like, wait, 3 years post-grad or four. Time's not real. Time isn't real, by the way. It's a trans
construct.
Where my, like in like my sessions, I do not feel as crisp in my attention, right? Like it's a lot harder. I feel like I'm bringing in so much more to be there, but I'm still there for clients. But then everything else is gone. Like my ability to sit and be with myself is fraught. It's non-existent. I mean, like I'm not even like having a moment of silence in the shower or brushing my teeth. Like I'm filling the cracks with just bleh going on in the background. Because the ability to sustain and like hold something is hard.
So it's like that kind of moment, which I relate so much to that. In the sense of like, how does this correlate with the felt sense of burnout?
Yes.
I do feel like that for me is my attentional and energy reserves are depleted.
They're depleted.
And they are hard to refill.
Yes.
So,
it takes like, it's almost like a little dropper's worth, like every couple of days that I can put back in it until things shift either in time, scheduling, time off, where that cup can replenish more. But I feel like that energy and those attention reserves get low for me. And then those, of course, impact how I spend my time with my time and my money.
So, sidebar, I've been doing a daily tarot pull from the Gaian Tarot, which I did show and tell recently on. And this morning I laughed out loud because I drew the Two of Air, which correlates to the Two of Swords. And in this particular deck, it is really about, like, how do you slow down and get still enough that you can hear that sort of inner guidance and move at the pace of that guidance? So not get so, you know, mired in like all of that external noise and distraction. And I'm like, I have drawn this card 3 out of the last 7 pulls. And I've shuffled this bitch every single time.
Oh, so it's...
So I believe that I asked ChatGPT what the odds are of that happening, and it is 1 in 200. Oh my God. So I was just like, message received.
Your deck is like, girl, I'm not fucking playing with you right now. Pay attention.
Okay, so what the hell do we do about all of this, right? Because we're in our truest fashion, we have to make sure that you have a tidbit. Because life is not hopeless. There is always a tidbit to be had. So... I really adored this. We're going to get very Francais about it. So, borrowed from the idea of dérivé, I believe. Yeah, I took French.
Oh, I love it.
Thanks. So, dérivé is French for drift. This kind of concept was put together, pioneered by a French Marxist philosopher, babe. His name was Guy something. He was T. In the 1950s. So, this philosopher was like, listen, we have got to kind of do something about where we're at. He kind of coined this like unplanned psychogeographical exploration of an urban landscape. So this involves dropping your usual routines and just kind of letting yourself kind of be subconsciously guided to where you want to go next, either guided by the architecture, atmosphere, terrain, rather than maps or schedules or getting the train. So no destination, no phone, looking where you are, not focusing on getting from point A to point B all of the time. No real destination. So that art of noticing, you know, reclaiming attention starts with something as small as actually looking down at the ground and then slowly looking up and then looking to your left and looking to your right. My boyfriend and I, when we were in London, it was like the second to last night. And then I was starting to get a little bit of the scaries. I was like, we're going to leave one another. This is going to be sad. So he was like, let's just go for a walk. City boy, he's so good at this. And he was like, let's just see where we were going. And we were just walking around and we would kind of get to a little bit of a intersection of a road. And he was just so lovely. I just love that man. And he was like, okay, like, where do you want to go now? So I was like, I don't know. He was like, well, just like look around and see where you want to go. So I didn't even know that we were engaging in the art of a dérivé, mama. But it was so stimulating. And of course, like, it's extra stimulating because neither of us live in London, right? Like, it's this new environment. But to just allow yourself to be led, after kind of reading this and thinking back through to that memory, I was like, wait, why don't I do this? Like, where I live? Like, why don't I do this in Nashville? Yes, when I travel, like, that's kind of the art of it. There's something different. But how important to maybe take on something like this where you are on your weekend or on your day off. I have a notorious habit on a day off of being like, of needing to structure it. Okay, so I'm going to get up here and then I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do that. And it's like, bitch, it's a Saturday and you don't work. Maybe just wake up and decide what you would like to do that day. And again, part of this is like neurodiversity for me, just always feeling like, yeah, and my anxiety, I'm like pretty anxiously wired person, but I think if I was able to just like really luxuriate into that in London, walking around where it was like piss raining because, hey, it's England, then I can, you know, take on little microdoses of that where you are. And I think I'm just going to fall down the rabbit hole in general about like psychogeography, like just like really, really interesting shit. So if you want to maybe go a little bit bigger, then this could be something interesting for you to try, listener. Other tidbits here, just exploring how you can create more just diversity in your like attentional ecologies in your world, just for different types of attention, like we were talking about, to flourish. So naming one attention kind of sanctuary you can find or build this week, whether that's, you know, a really intentional meal or your commute or a room, a gathering with your favorite people. And then other just kind of smaller, I think really tangible action steps. Remember to protect your valuable resource. We're going against this fracking. Please block your damn apps. please. And do it in the method in which is going to work the best for you, from paid to unpaid options, not spons, but hit us up, you know. Opal, ScreenZen, Brick, Jomo, literally anything. You do not need to be ashamed about doing this. I'm telling literally every single person that I work with nowadays to find the method that works for them, because you don't have to be ashamed about having really, really high screen time. Again, like Val said, on one hand, releasing some of the shame and guilt, and then on the other hand, pulling up a little bit of agency. If you have 18 hours of screen time, sis, I want you the next week to have 17. And I don't want you overnight to drop your screen time down to 5 minutes a day, because you're not going to fucking do that. Slowly decrease. I have a friend who used ChatGPT who was like, hey, help me decrease my screen time. And over the weeks, she adjusted her plan. And she fell off kind of at some points, but it worked. She was like slowly decreasing that time. She had help.
And that's also the piece of like, you will assume you will fall off. Yes. And then how can you get back on, right? Correct. And I've done this too, like with my Jomo app, is I'll do really well with it for like a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And then for whatever reason, I'm on a vacation day, whatever.
Yeah.
I will turn it off. And then I'll just be like, you know what I'm not going to do? Turn it back on.
Yeah.
And eventually I'll get sick of myself. And by sick of myself, I mean the attention merchants. Hello. And I will turn it back on.
The last piece, literally just microdose. I can't stress this enough. And this again, kind of goes into my like less is more, what I've been trying to notice within myself. So spending the first 5 minutes of waking up in the morning in quiet, ditching the scroll when you're taking shit, because I know y'all are doing it. Put the devices down, put your thing down, and just like look up, look down, look around. It's really, really small. And again, if you just do a couple of these things here and there, I believe that you are, you know, kind of like coming home to like your attention. You're reclaiming your attention for that free will for yourself. So just looking at some of these options and just kind of starting with what you think is tangible, and knowing that there is tangible things always, especially with this stuff.
Yeah. So the yes and of it all is like the individual steps are important and necessary.
Correct.
And also they are not sufficient,
no.
Right? Which is why I love the framing of this as a collective action movement. Mm-hmm. So the movement's reframe, which comes out of the Attensity Manifesto, we'll link it in the show notes. It's a fabulous manifesto, is that individual willpower of like, we'll just, you know, delete the app or whatever.
Yeah.
Puts 100% of the burden on individuals to resist powerful systems built by these teams of behavioral scientists and technologists. So I really like SORA, that's the School of Radical Attention's SOS framework on what that activism really entails. So it's study, organizing, and sanctuary. The study, like I said, the articles that we're reading, the sort of like critical thinking we're doing about this idea of attention and our lived experience of it, that study together is, I mean, I'm blown away at some of these things that we've even talked about in today's conversation have come out of the conversations I'm having in that course that I would not have gleaned had I just read the articles or watched videos on my own. So studying together, not just alone, leaning on scholar Fred Moten's idea that study is fundamentally something you do with other people. The organizing component, building coalitions who agree that attention is worth protecting, and sanctuary, as you were talking about, building actual spaces, whether that's physical spaces or time-contained spaces, where attention is protected. Phone-free dinners, sidewalk study walks, community rituals. We also shared some really lovely examples of how people are finding sanctuary, but more of that. Like even the comedy clubs that say, hey, bitch, put your phone in the little sleeve because we do not want you filming any piece of this, and we want your attention here.
I know everyone hates that, but I kind of think that's cheap.
I love it, and I honestly wish there were more places, and hopefully that's a part of what this movement can be. Can we create more sanctuaries in the world? You can also join SORA's coalition after you complete the Attention Activism 201 course, which I plan to do. And then just generally, like in that macro picture, as a society, we have created regulations for things that we're seeing as having the potential for societal harm. Firearms, lol, we need more of them. But we do have regulations,
yes.
Right? Cars, drugs, alcohol. Why not attention? And this is starting to happen. There are lawsuits, and some of these suits are being won by individuals and families that are going, hey, this really fucked me up or really fucked my kid up. So it's going to be slow and steady, but it's going to require this ongoing coalition and movement if we are going to get anywhere with actually creating meaningful regulations. And then the last thing I was thinking about, like with the whole idea of, you know, debt and how having like personal finance education is so empowering for learning how to be a good steward of your money. What about attentional literacy, right? That could be just as valuable as something like media literacy or financial literacy, which are all underrepresented in education. But that sort of study element, I feel like needs to be part of the societal conversation, hopefully something that's brought into public education. But for real, losing your focus in a world that is literally engineered to fragment it is not a personal failing. It is the business model. Attention was never supposed to be this hard to fight on your own. So remember that you don't have to. Find your people, create your sanctuary, and reclaim your attention, people.
Mic drop, honey. Okay. Let's get into a little bit of, now, that's what I call, where Valerie and I share a song with one another, typically from our respective generations, sometimes within theme, just to give each other a little bit of musical schmeducation. You can catch all of our songs linked in our little Spotify playlist in our show notes. We love music. So I have just been gagging over this song. Every time I get in my car, I want to listen to this song. You know those songs that just hit so good anyways, but in the car, they hit like extra? This for me is just such a good summer, spring, car song. I don't know what it is. It just itches my brain so good. So it's Rein Me In by Sam Fender featuring Olivia Dean. I'm going to guess you haven't heard of Sam Fender, but you've heard of Olivia Dean. Of course, she's beautiful and gorgeous and talented. So I don't think this is like super in relation to the topic. I mean, it could be, but like I said, something about it just itches my brain. And I really love the dynamic in the song of kind of this like avoid an anxious precipice of love. I think this is like a really great therapy song. And Sam Fender and Olivia are both British artists. So yeah, just kind of getting a little bit of a vibe for who they are. I believe this was released this year. I haven't gone super far into Sam Fender stuff. I think you might want to put the subtitles to understand him. I can understand him, but I've had other people listen to this and they're like, hey, what is he saying?
Yeah.
So I'm excited for you to hear it.
That was so cute.
It's cute, right?
Yeah, like joyful, like you said.
Yeah, and like, and I find it really interesting. The like lyricism itself, obviously it's like about this like anxious avoidance, like don't rein me in, like, oh my God, all of the parts of this town have our ghosts, but it has just this like, it's that like, like little thing that just like, itches my brain so good.
We were also impressed that they managed to get the word tinnitus into not just the song, but the chorus. Also, like, to make a bit of a stretch and connect it to the theme, I think this idea of don't rein me in, like, that these, we are on the chains
of
these companies and their profit incentives,
right?
And so if you imagine, like, cutting those chains and running free, like, letting your attention run wild and free.
See, you kind of got the vibe. I was like, it doesn't fit, but I feel like it could. We could make
freedom,
it good.
Freedom. Liberation. Right?
What did you pull for this week?
So just kind of like from the general vibe, I chose Mad World, the Gary Jules cover. It's originally a Tears for Fears song from the early 80s. You have surely heard this cover. It has gotten so much play. I was actually looking at poor Gary's Wikipedia page this morning. This, I fear, was a one-hit wonder. And it was a cover. However, it has been placed in dozens and dozens of shows and movies.
Yeah.
So iconic. It came out in 2001 on the Donnie Darko soundtrack, which if you have not watched that, now on your list, it is like dark, psychological. It's really, really incredible. But this song is such a mood. And then I think it was like reached some number one status a couple years later when it was released as a single. So, excellent. And I've never seen the video. Yeah.
So one hit wonder the house, but like that iconic cover. Gary, you really ate that up, girl.
I know. That'll put you in a mood, right?
Yeah, now I'm
going to be in a mood.
Oh, yeah. Play that song.
And now we are going to wrap it up with our dumpster fire phoenix, where we go dumpster diving for good news because it is dark out there.
Yes.
And I just wanted to keep it simple and like triple underline how, like, I don't know. It's been so invigorating to realize that there is this entire movement happening.
Yeah.
And that even Sora is getting a lot of traction already. The impact is growing. It's a joyful movement. And they have task forces for educators. They have all kinds of little tentacles that are coming out into the world. So I'm just really excited to see where this goes. And it's proof that the people are fighting back, and we are building community while doing it. So I just think this is such an incredible movement, and I encourage everyone to check it out. Shout out.
What you got?
Mine's short and sweet. I got a Kindle for my birthday. Yes, I'm kind of a
hold the trigger.
Sorry, Amazon.
I know. Right. Sorry, but I'm really, again, some of that less is more, a little bit of a buy one's cry ones, you know, like less books. Mm-hmm. Collecting dust on my shelf is nice. It's just really been feeding. I've just been feeling really good. I really love that I'm noticing my attention changing, that I'm desiring to read, that I want to get into fiction again. But I just, you know, I'm eating it up. I feel like a kid again. I want to read before bed. I want to read in these like in between moments of my day just to get a couple of pages in. To me, that feels like it goes into my daylight, right? Yeah. Where it's like, I love stories and I love to expand my mind and to read. And that feels like something that's driven entirely by my own desires to expand and get lost in a story and expand my knowledge. So it's been really nice. Hate you, Amazon, for all of your unethical ways, but shout out to Kindle.
Thanks for the Kindle.
I'm a beautiful little e-reader that doesn't hurt my eyes and I can read at night. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So very lovely. Yay. Attention, attention, attention. Mm-hmm. It's yours.
It's yours, babe. Reclaim it.
Reclaim it.
See you next time.
Bye.
This has been another episode of But For Real, hosted by Valerie Martin and Emerson Ryder and edited by Volt Productions. But For Real is produced by the Gaia Center for Embodied Healing. The Gaia Center offers individual, couples, and group therapy for clients across Tennessee and in person in our Nashville office, as well as coaching and other programs for clients worldwide. For show notes or to learn more about our work, visit GaiaCenter.co or find us on Instagram at the Gaia Center and at But For Real Pod.
But For Real is intended for education and entertainment and is not a substitute for mental health treatment.
Also, since we host this podcast primarily as humans rather than clinicians, we are not shy about sharing our opinions here on everything from snacks and movies to politicians and social issues.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode.
See you next time, bestie.